Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. Welcome to the Metron Live podcast, coming to you from beautiful historic Midtown Atlanta, Georgia. Metron people, would you give the podcast people a welcoming hand? Glad that you have. What do you say to a podcast? Do you tune in or log on? What do you tuned in? Those of you that tuned into the podcast, I never. Sometimes these days I'll say something and think I don't think that's applicable anymore. Do you notice people in my age demographic? If we're talking about rolling down a window, we still do that. Have you noticed that? Like, well, I walked up, and I rolled down the window. Like, really, what were you doing? Well, I don't know. I just like to make that. Or I called him up. Those of you that listen to the podcast don't know what I'm doing. I'm pantomiming, literally rolling down a window, car window manually, and dialing a telephone. Let me make this clear for this teaching this month. Our title is for the series this month is "It's a Wonderful Life: Freeing Yourself from the Ghost of Christmas Past to Follow Your Star into Your Future." I'm not sure I connected these dots like I should have last week. Let me explain to you the meaning of the title and why I'm talking about these stories. You know, Jesus was a storyteller. If you go back and read the Gospels, Jesus spent way more time just telling stories than he did preaching sermons. And that's why I've never apologized for referring to movies and television in trying to get a point across, because in my mind, they're modern-day parables. I think that's, when Jesus was speaking to an agricultural society, he talked about sowers and reapers and farmers and sons who ran away and all these things. But in this generation, I can make a point by talking about something that you've seen on a movie or whatever, which I can't believe how late I stayed up. Ken is on call this week, and sometimes I'll start watching something on Netflix, and I don't realize that it's a series. And so I started this thing way too late last night about this guy years ago who said he killed all these people, and all these people in Texas believed he was the most awful serial killer in history. Come to find out, he had made it all up. And so I was riveted to it, but I was like, God, it's like 1 o'clock in the morning. What, there's more parts to this? And I thought, please tell me what happened to the, because the Texas cops were all in on it. I'm like, oh, I've got to watch. So, I mean, I got like 5 episodes. I think I watched it at 4 o'clock this morning. So I'm finally laying, like, I've got to go to bed, but I know if I go to bed, I'm gonna be saying, well, what happened to the guy? Is he on death row still or whatever? And I still don't think I finished it all. I didn't realize it was a series. I got pulled into it. You know, Netflix series land is like, it's like time stands still. You don't realize, there's no commercials, and you can zone out, and then after a while, it'll come on and say, "Are you still watching something?" Like, yes, I am. Hello. So anyway, that's how I spent my evening. I'd like to take a nap this afternoon, but it's Olivia's got her dance recital this afternoon, so I got to go to that. I was hoping Mom would let me off the hook. I got Olivia's. She says, well, just make sure you get us salmon tacos. Okay. Well, okay. So I will be omnipresent. I will be all things to all people. Actually, she said, if you have to drive back into Atlanta, don't worry about it. So I'll find something in Decatur where I'll be. Anyway, the point of this is first of all, let me say, Christmas is this strange amalgam of Christianity and paganism and all these things that got wrapped into what we now know as Christianity. Like, even the first two songs that Jonah sang today were about winter. Let It Snow and what was the first one? Oh, Rock Around the Christmas Tree. But it talks about snow as well. And the winter solstice was celebrated on what we now have December 25th, even before there was a Roman calendar. Even before it was December 25th, people who lived by the sun were celebrating winter centuries before Jesus was born. The Catholic Church Christianized all of the pagan holidays. But this thing about keep Christ in Christmas, well, Jesus kind of came later in the story. Jesus was actually born in April. And so much of this war on Christmas thing is just, it's a political farce. There's no war. Not only is there not a war on Christmas, it's starting earlier every year. You know, it used to be they didn't start Christmas stuff till Thanksgiving. Then it was Halloween. Now I started seeing Christmas stuff like end of July, like people were already selling. So I don't, if there's a war on Christmas, Christmas is winning. Christmas is overtaking things. So, of course, the Christmas, the Jesus story is a beautiful part of it. And I don't, unless I'm just not looking for it, I don't see Jesus being cut out of stuff. Like I was watching the lighting of the tree at Rockefeller Center the other night, and they sang all the Jingle Bell stuff. But then, you know, they did Joy to the World, and they did every verse to it, you know. Joy to the World is a very militant Christian song. You know, he rules the world with truth and grace. Like, it's Joy to the World's not even about inclusion. It's like, it's all Jesus. And you know, NBC didn't cut it out. And like, everywhere I go, I hear Jesus being sung about. I just have too big a Jesus. The Jesus I met is so big and powerful, he's not, he's not threatened by other stories. As a matter of fact, this week was the feast of St. Nicholas. You know, there actually was a Bishop St. Nicholas that the Santa Claus myth is based on. So even that, of course, he didn't live at the North Pole and all that kind of stuff, but there was so many of the traditions that became the Santa Claus story could be traced back to St. Nicholas, who was a part of the Council of Nicaea. Santa Claus helped put the Bible together, the Christian Bible that we have. So I don't see it as an us versus them. And this week I saw it again. Somebody had posted this story that Obama took the nativity scene out of the White House, but Trump brought it back. I'm like, can you not tell that's a phony story? There's never been a nativity scene in the White House. B, if there had been, Obama wouldn't have taken it out. And if he did, I don't know that Trump would have brought it back. I mean, it's like, what, the whole thing, no, but the whole thing is just a made up, it's just an urban legend that punches people's buttons and makes people think this thing's going on. And it didn't just start with this administration. I remember even back when Mitt Romney was running, one day I was listening to his speech, and I'm trying to hear him out, like, well, let me hear you make your case. And he's talking to the crowd, and he says, and we're not going to take In God We Trust off the coins. And the crowd's yelling, and I'm like, is that a thing? Like, I've never even heard anybody, is that threatened? You know, but that crowd sure thought it was. I don't even know if I would notice if they took it off the coins. I don't even look at that. But anyway, don't get mad at me. Please don't send me hostile emails for that. I'm just saying, Christmas, just enjoy all of it. And the reason I'm using this title, there are issues that we all have to deal with in our lives and our evolution. And I believe in these Christmas stories, not just in the Jesus story, but all of these stories, the Ebenezer Scrooge story, the Grinch story, the Charlie Brown story, all of them, there's one common denominator. They all have an epiphany. In every one of the stories, there's like a revelation that's like a born-again experience. Like, they are born again. And there's usually a supernatural element to it. And, you know, I love that scene in the, you know, when the Grinch, the cartoon Grinch that came on in the late 60s with Boris Karloff and Thurl Ravenscroft, who was the voice of Tony the Tiger. They're great. He's the one that sings, "You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch." Chuck Jones, who did all of the Bugs Bunny cartoons, he's the one that drew that. And I love that scene where the Grinch is looking down at Whoville and he realizes that he couldn't take Christmas away from them because it was in their hearts. And his heart grows three sizes too big and it breaks out of the box. That's like, that's very spiritual. That's born again. Well, he didn't call on the name of Jesus. I think you're missing the point. Jesus is doing just fine. And Jesus isn't going anywhere. I don't know if you've driven around America, but there are churches, Christian churches, on every corner. And a lot of them are huge. There's no, churches are fine. Jesus is fine. You need to work on you. Stop being so worried about Jesus and worry about you a little bit more. Jesus is fine. He already worked out his issues. Hebrews says he learned obedience to the things he suffered. So he already got his. You're working on yours. That's why you came to Metron this morning. So the point is, in purging ourselves from our ghost of Christmas past, we hear these stories again, and they have something to say to us. One thing's for sure, if you want longevity in the music business, make a Christmas album, because they play Christmas music. This year, Sirius has got 5 whole channels devoted to it. And I think, and half the people singing on there are Jewish. I'm like, wow, this is amazing. You know, you never did a Hanukkah album. But you know, if you make a Christmas album, you're guaranteed airplay at least once a year. But I hear these songs over and over again. He sang The Little Drummer Boy. That's what I talked about last week. And I've talked about The Drummer Boy for years, but I brought out things last week that I had never even talked about before. And got really good response from that. Today I want to talk about Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And I've talked about him before, but let me just give you some background. First of all, there's not a lot of history on the song, just so you'll get some context. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is a song by songwriter Johnny Marks based on the 1939 story Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, published by the Montgomery Ward Company. It actually was a man who, he was a graduate of Dartmouth College, and Montgomery Ward asked him to do a Christmas story for something, and he wrote this. And it's interesting because on the surface, it just seems like you know, a cute little Christmas story, but there's really a lot of texture to this story. The story's about bullying. It's about being marginalized. It's about finding out that what you thought was wrong with you is really what's right with you. It's about how much do we compromise our originality and try to become like everybody else. It's about seizing your opportunity, understanding when your foggy Christmas Eve comes, and you know, when is it your time to shine? There's really so much in there. Some people would hear that and say, "Well, that's not a Bible story." Yeah, it is. Just hang on. It's believe it or not, there is truth beyond the Bible, and the Bible, wonderful as it is inspired. But the Bible is here to confirm truth for us that we already have. David said, "Your word have I hidden in my heart." He wrote that centuries before there was ever anything called the Bible. And John comes along and says, in the beginning was the Word. He didn't say in the beginning was the Bible. It wasn't some big leather-bound book floating in outer space. There was something called the Word that is contained in the Bible. Is the Bible the Word of God? It's in there. It can connect you to it. But James said that the Word is like a mirror. So there are things that you learn in your own journey that can be confirmed by things that the Bible writers said. But let me show you where I'm going with this. This is a quote. Give me the number 2 up here. I don't know who the author is, but this was a quote I saw. It says, "Being an atheist is okay. Being an atheist and shaming religions and spirituality as silly is not okay. Being a Christian is okay. Being homophobic, misogynistic, racist, and otherwise hateful person in the name of Christianity is not okay. Being a reindeer is okay. Bullying and excluding another reindeer because he has a shiny red nose is not okay." I mean, basically, that's my sermon. Thanks for coming today. And then I'll show you, this is something I'm quoting myself. I know that sounds like, really? You've gone to quoting yourself? But I had written this on Facebook. I thought, well, that's good. I'm going to copy and paste that. So this is by renowned author Jim Swilly. I quote him often. "All of the other reindeer used to laugh and call him names. They never let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer games. To everyone who has ever been marginalized, ostracized, or made fun of because something about you is different or considered to be odd by the mainstream, let me encourage you to embrace the gospel according to Rudolph and be inspired to celebrate the very thing that set you apart from the herd. The uniqueness or eccentricity that made the others laugh at you or make you feel less than is the very thing that the world needs, even though they don't know it yet. And when the right time comes, the thing that they thought was weird about you will be exactly what makes you so special and valuable and will cause you to lead the pack." When the lyric says, "Then how All the reindeer loved him as they shouted out with glee, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, you'll go down in history. It always makes me think of when Joseph's brothers finally realized how amazing his gift was. It was a long time coming for him, but his latter was most definitely greater than his former at the end of Genesis. So hang on, your foggy Christmas Eve is coming. See? That's a pretty good quote. You know? I can't find anybody said anything better than what I already said, so I'm going to drop the mic now and stand here like this. Let me show you. I'm going to kind of go through this quickly, and then I'll talk to you. So, this I do love this Matthew 5:5 in the Message. I've used it a lot. In the King James, it's "Blessed are the meek," and it's interesting how the man who paraphrased this, how he went into the original text and sort of found this nuanced meaning. I love it. In the Message, it says, "You're blessed when you're content with just who you are, no more or no less." That's the moment you find yourselves proud owners of everything that can't be bought. So this week, the 1964, it's not claymation, but it's those Rankin-Bass stop motion animation that, you know, they did Rudolph and they did Frosty the Snowman, but they did The Little Drummer Boy. There were several in the 60s that Rankin-Bass put out. And their first big one was Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and it was on this week. It's a little tedious, and I have to kind of fast forward through it, but it's a really interesting story where a lot of LGBT people really relate to it because there's really a gay subtext to it because in the story, I think Donner is his father, and Donner is horrified that he's got his son with a shiny nose. And the mom kind of defends little Rudolph, and the dad is like, no son of mine's going to have a red nose in this house, and makes him cover up his true identity, which did make me think of I shouldn't include this in the sermon, but I just remember years ago, David Letterman, top 10 list that reindeer hate, and one of them was when Prancer and Dancer start playing those damn Judy Garland albums. That was fun. That was funny. That was funny. That's for some of my audience, not for all of my audience. Anyway, so in the special that was on, you know which one I'm talking about, 1964, with the Island of Misfit Toys. There's even Burl Ives does it, and there's a King Morningstar, is that his name? The lion that's on the he's definitely a Christ figure. He's the one that it kind of reminds me of C.S. Lewis and The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. But he's a winged lion who's a king, and he sees the best in the Island of Misfit Toys. And there's a lot of spirituality to it. And of course, to fill up an entire hour, they had to really beef up that story and add, you know, things that weren't in the song. But it definitely drives home the point that this thing where all of the other reindeer used to laugh and call him names. Last week, when I talked about the little drummer boy, I focused on the word they. Come, they told me. And we're talking about how the Magi was saying to him, we realize you're just a poor kid and all you got's a little drum, but we're bringing our finest gifts. Come with us. That sounds great, but how do you know, am I really welcome in that context? I mean, that, you know, when these guys are kings and they're telling me that they're bringing their finest gifts and they're inviting me to come along, I'm a little intimidated by that. And there's a they concept in Rudolph as well. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had a very shiny nose. If you ever saw it, you would say it glows. That seems very benign. That doesn't sound like, well, there's nothing I can relate to in that song. But then you get to that next stanza, and it says, all of the other reindeer used to laugh and call him names. Now, I don't know if you ever had playground drama growing up, but I've done enough counseling in my life to know that there are adults walking around with unresolved childhood issues of they, like people who were not like them, whether it was the color of your skin or your mannerisms or your weight. I'm friends with a guy on Facebook that I went to elementary school with, and we haven't talked in our adult life. We ran into him a couple years ago at an event, but I remember he's been through a lot. I even think he had gastric bypass, but I remember when we were kids, he was very overweight, and I can just remember the hell he went through, the stuff people said to him. And there were, I can remember, because that's back when we had outdoor PE every day, and he and one other guy, I remember they were both very heavy set kids, and it's not like I was some big major jock, but I could do the, you know, for calisthenics though, I could do that. You know, I could hang out, and those two guys, man, they just got brutalized, not just by the other kids, but by the coaches. I remember the coaches would say horrible things to them, really demeaning things. And you know, we didn't hear a lot about bullying back then, but I'm telling you, you know, these days when some marginalized kid walks into a school and opens fire and starts shooting people, you start connecting the dots, and you'll find, I always hear it when they, you know, after there's been a shooting, they'll interview people who were in the same classroom, and they will invariably say, we never even noticed him. We never even talked to him. We're so surprised. I'm like, well, you notice him now, don't you? You know his name now. And that's why, especially when we had the church, there were a lot of kids there. If I ever noticed that a kid might have been a little marginalized, whatever, I tried to make a point. It's, you know, there was a time I knew every kid's name, and then at a certain point, I couldn't keep up with it. But I tried to at least, you know, have a moment with them where I made eye contact and asked them about school or whatever, just to make them know, I notice you. I was raised in a generation where I was heard children should be seen and not heard. You know, children weren't encouraged to say anything. And this hadn't happened in years, but I remember back in the day, oh my God, this is the worst thing, when somebody would drag their kid up to me. And many times it's the first time I've ever had any interaction with this child at all. And they'd say, Bishop, I need you to pray for him, because he's a behavioral problem, and he got suspended this week. And you know, and it just totally shamed the kid in front of me. And I'm looking at the mother like, please don't do that. I mean, you're totally embarrassing your child. I'm an authority figure in their life, and you've completely demeaned him in front of me. And you know, you've prophesied over him or her. So now you've set it in motion for them to fulfill this prophecy. You've said they're a behavior problem, and they're probably going to be a behavior problem now. And, you know, I wouldn't confront the mother in front of the kid, but or the father, usually moms. But I would say later, like, please, you know, for future reference, please don't do that with your child. Because, like, if you want to talk to me about them, that's fine. But don't, you know, bring them up in front of a crowd and say all this stuff about them. That it's just, you know, it's embarrassing to them. And plus, you're playing to the lowest common denominator. I've said this for years. I've written it in books. There's two words you really need to be careful how you use. One is the word always, and the other word is never. Because when you say to a kid, you always do this, or you never do this, always and never are very powerful words. And they lock in certain realities that people end up, you know, that's what's been spoken to me, so I guess that's who I am. I remember when we had the street jam with Pastor Scott Pettit would take into the housing authority. He did something that I thought was really smart. Like, if he ever had a kid that was a problem, he would make him part of the staff. He said, you know, I'd get him a staff T-shirt and have them help me pass out candy or whatever. And he said, automatically they're behavior would change. And it's because they didn't feel alienated. They didn't feel marginalized. When you feel like you're a part of the team, you know, you're not self-conscious. And so the whole thing about Rudolph is, he's not like us. He's not a part of the other. He's not a part of the team. All of the other reindeer used to laugh and call him names. They never let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer games. You know, life's hard. I think you have to teach your kids how to deal with conflict, and you can't be overly protective, and you have to put skills in them to know how to deal, how to push back and that sort of thing, because you can't protect them all the time. And I've seen parents overcompensate and, you know, they can't see any fault in their kid at all, which that's an extreme that's wrong on the other side. Like in my day, my parents were, and if mom's streaming, she'll know this is true. They were always on the side of authority. Like if we ever had a parent-teacher conference, whatever the teacher said, I don't care if I said, that's an absolute lie. They always believed the teacher. Always. They were always on the teacher's side. That was back when they had corporal punishment in class. And I used to always hear, if you ever get a paddling at school, you come home, you can get one here too. I'm like, wow. It's hard out here for a pimp. I'm telling you. Like, I can't get a break. You're supposed to be on my side. They always believed the teacher. And there were certain things that teachers said, you know, Jimmy does not apply himself. I'm like, what does that even mean? Some years I just want to say to the teacher, can you just give me the report card? Let me go ahead and write this for you. Talks too much in class, does not apply himself. Is that what you're going to say? How did you know? Because I've heard it before. This is the only social interaction I have with other children. I'm sorry. I don't see any other kids during the week. I'm an only child, a very sheltered only child. I'm going to talk a little bit. Sorry. Not trying to upstage your class, but I just needed to say something. I'm not trying to make it difficult for you. Yes, Jimmy talks too much in class, and I don't know what the hell does not apply himself mean. What are you talking about? Does not apply himself. Your class is boring. How can I apply? You don't even know what you're talking about. If you explain to me, I've been reading this in report cards for years. I have no idea. What does that mean, apply myself? I'm showing up. I'm doing the assignments. What do you? It's like when somebody says, watch this. I'm watching. No, really watch it. Like, I'm watching it. How do I really watch it? How do I really apply myself? And see why I needed this series? I'm purging the ghost of my own Christmas past to follow my star into my future. Anyway, this is something that kids can relate to. I even remember, I think I've shared this with you before, but when my older two granddaughters were smaller, I used to take them to the park. I'd pick them up from school and take them to the park and let them play with other kids. And it was very interesting watching their age group interact with one another. You kind of see who, you know, who natural-born leaders were. It's just really interesting. Like, I learned so much watching kids because there'd always be some kid on the playground that was just telling everybody else what to do. And I recognized it because I was kind of that way. I mean, I just, like, if I was with other kids, I just would have these great ideas. Like let's play like this. And people would, I don't know why, I just could always influence people. Maybe that's why teachers didn't want me to talk in class, because I had too much influence, trying to keep me down. But, I'd watch them play and see, you know, how little cliques form and how kids were ostracized. And I've told you the story about when the little girls told Olivia she wasn't smart enough to play the teacher, and how that kind of played out. And I nearly went off on that little girl, but I didn't want to be in the newspaper. But I didn't speak to her, but I spoke to Olivia, and I said, Olivia, whoever said to you you're not smart enough to be the teacher was wrong. You may be too young to be the teacher, because these girls are 3 or 4 years older than you, but you're just as smart, if not smarter, than any of these kids around here. So, girl, you be the teacher if you want to be. And you tell any of these other little girls, if they want to go tell their mama that, they can tell them that. Okay? You have to speak to your granddaughter. Because if you speak to the kid, I'm going to get into a thing with the mom saying, you know, why are you yelling at my kid? I'm like, I wasn't talking to your kid, I was talking to my granddaughter, who's just as smart as your little girl, who basically has a little attitude problem. But I remember that day when she said it, I looked at, when she said, because I said, what's the problem here? And the girl looked at me, she said, she wants to be the teacher, but she's not smart enough. And I watched Olivia's body language, she just went like that. And I thought, oh no, you didn't. And, but then I noticed later that day, she was acting out. I said, what's wrong? Why are you being this way? She said, I don't know, Poppy. I don't know. I thought, that's how it happens. You know, if you don't deal with a thing then, that playground is going to stay alive in you. Those ghosts of Christmas past are still going to be saying those same voices. And I remember one day I was watching, I mean, this is back when, gosh, Sophia was kindergarten, first grade. And I don't want to stereotype anybody, but I'm looking at them play with this little boy who, you know, Gaydar says this little boy's gay. And this little boy doesn't know what sex is, but I can tell by, you know, just everything about him I recognize. And I'm looking at how he interacts with the other boys, and I thought, man, I hope you've got a good support system, because the way you are, the way you walk, the way you talk, the way all of that, that's innate in you. That's nothing you can change. And, you know, in watching Rudolph this week, you know, the dad makes Rudolph put a thing over his nose. And that's why he talks funny, because he you know, can't breathe with this thing. And basically, he teaches him, do not be yourself. This may be who you are, but it's so unacceptable that you can never, ever, ever show it. And because of that, like, I understand why there's a gay pride. I understand why there's a Black History Month. I understand why all these, you know, when people have been told, we are not interested in your story, your story is not included in the main story, then you have to find other outlets to be heard, because everybody has to be heard. Everybody has to be seen. Being heard and being seen is just as important to you as breathing and drinking water and eating. It's like you can't live without it. You can't live life being invisible. And you can't live life being told that you can't be who you are. Rudolph just had a red nose. He didn't ask for a red nose. He didn't decide to have a red nose. He didn't look into the red nose lifestyle. Nobody converted him to red nosian thinking. He just had it. I'm telling you, I have four children, and in many ways they're a lot alike, but in a lot of ways they're all like only children. Those of you that have more than one kid know they kind of come in with their own temperament. You can do certain things to shape them, but whoever they are is who they are, and that's not going to change. I don't know why I was listening to this. I'm listening to so much murder this weekend, but I was listening. Dr. Phil has this podcast where he talks about the psychology of murder, and there was one. I started listening to this one yesterday. Why am I listening to this? Because it's very oppressive. But it's this family, this Christian family. You know, they talked about the plaque over their door that said, "As for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord." And somebody came in and murdered the entire family, and the father somehow survived, but it was brutal murder. And as it turns out, it was the boyfriend of their 16-year-old daughter who they had forbidden to see. And Dr. Phil was talking about how, you know, you can tell teenagers you can't see this boy anymore, and they can, they can agree with you, but this girl never stopped seeing this kid, and she helps plot the murder. She's in prison now. All the rest of them are all, I think she's up for parole when she's 59. And the father, who somehow survived, has forgiven her, and he said, "I'm hoping I stay alive long enough to meet her when she is paroled and can talk to her." But what Dr. Phil is saying is, you can't change something. You know, like people say, "Well, that's just puppy love." Let me tell you something: puppy love is real to the puppy. And even if you think, and believe me, I didn't do it with the boys so much, but with Christina, I kicked a couple of guys out of the front yard or whatever, because I was just like, "Christina, I know you don't understand this right now, but this guy is, he's so bad for you." And I'm not sure I always dealt with it right, you know, and now I had to learn as an adult. I'm like, you know, when she became an adult, like, you know what, you got to make your choices now. You're an adult, and whoever you choose, I'm on board with them, you know, whatever. But it's hard, you know, when you see your kids, you know they're making a mistake, but they have to be able to see it. Because if you galvanize their wrong thinking, all they do is go underground with it. So you've got to be able to talk and at least acknowledge, like, you know, what is it that you see in this kid? And why? Because just just because you see the big picture doesn't mean they see it. And sometimes, believe it or not, your kids may be right about something. You know, sometimes you see it entirely wrong because you're looking at things through your paradigm. Let me tell you, and I'm going to end with a scripture that talks about this, but you have to let your children live their life. It's not fair for you to inflict your unresolved issues, make them deal with your ghosts of Christmas past. Your life is your life. Their life is their life. I remember, you know, I don't know how much he would be okay with me sharing, but, you know, years ago, Jared had to go through a drug rehab, and, you know, we've talked about it publicly. But I went out to Kalispell, Montana, and I was married to Jonah's mom then. She went out there. We had to do this thing where it's called knees to knees, and it's where you can sit in a non-judgmental situation, and the kids are allowed, kids are all drug addicts. They're allowed to say anything to the parents, and the parents can't say anything, but the kids get to be heard entirely. And it was, in my life, I'll never see a movie scarier than what I saw that day. Because these kids annihilated their parents. I mean, just one after another. These people were reduced to sobs. And Jared was really hard on his mom and on his stepdad at the time. And I thought, you know, when I heard what he said to them, and I'm like, oh, crap, I dread what mine is. So when it came my time, I sat down with him and I said, well, let's go. What do you want to say? And he actually said, I don't have any issue with you. He said, I consider you my friend. But he said, I feel like you're disappointed I didn't go in the ministry, and that makes me feel less than. And I had no idea he thought that. And I heard him out, and I said, Jared, just so you know, that I've never thought that. But I was so happy that was it. I'm like, that's all you're upset about? You know? I'm looking at the other parents, and they're like, what? I need to be teaching a seminar in here. You know, because I thought, good God, no telling what he's going to say. Because, you know, you can remember things you did that you're like, I shouldn't have done it that way. Or, you know, parents are only human. But I was so surprised that that's what he thought. And then it was interesting when his band took off, and they were outrageous and did all kind of crazy antics on stage or whatever. But I would read in his interviews, he would say, I'm from a long line of ministers, and he connected the dots. He felt like what he's doing, he would talk about, you know, my dad was a Pentecostal preacher, and they goes, you know, they have praise and worship, and everybody dances and feels better. He said, basically, that's what we do, and, you know, we make everybody feel good, and you know, they feel better. And I thought, well, I wouldn't have seen that coming, but okay, I think that's interesting that you connected those dots like that, and that you feel like you're a part of, you know, a lineage. But I would have never told any of my kids, including Judah, who of the four of them is the one that's, you know, more ministry motivated. But if any of them said, I don't have any inclination toward ministry, I would think, you just saved yourself a lot of heartache. Ministry's hard. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, if somebody says they're called to the ministry, you're like, ooh, sucks to be you, you know, sorry. Like, really? You know, see if God will let you do something else. Because, you know, like in traditional Christian church, there's so much you have to compromise to be successful. There's so many things you have to do and not do and not preach, whatever, to keep people happy. I'm past that. I'm sort of in post-church reality now. But when you're in actual church, well, so much of it is based on farce. So much of church is not, it's not real. It's wood, hay, and stubble. It's a masquerade party. It's, you know, it's just not real. And the things you have to compromise. I mean, do you know what's affected my life and my choices and the way things have played out in my life more than anything else? Real people experiencing the real God in the real world. That one statement became true for all of us. And when you start really being who you really are and saying what you really believe and what you really don't believe, like I look at people who are still, you know, about blaming God about things and rebuking the devil and stuff, and I think, well, you're in such a delusion. You don't even realize that you're making everything happen in your life. I'm not taking a higher power away from you, but even with a higher power, it's your choices that are playing out in your life. It's like this thing, you're going through life thinking, you know, go back and read the book of Job. Job starts with God and the devil arguing about his life, and it ends with God coming to him out of a whirlwind saying, this isn't the devil or me, this is you. Gird up your loins and confess to me, I'll show you that your own right hand can save you. I mean, Job is the ultimate humanist manifesto. Because basically, it's a fable, but, you know, God says, Job, you're doing this. You know, this is all the response to your fears, your belief system, all the... It's very empowering when you realize, oh, I'm in charge of me. You know, like I always tell you, I don't want to ever lose my Jesus take the wheel clause. You know, Avery asked me this week, she'd read an article about people who pray in the spirit or have a prayer language, that somebody had done a study on brain activity. And I've read things along those lines. And she's, I just want to know, do you still do that? And I said, oh, yeah. I mean, that's always a part of my... I'm not inclined now to pray for other people to see if they'll do it, because when Paul said, do all speak with tongues, I think that's a very loaded statement. I think he's implying not everybody wants to or needs to. But if you want to, like when we lost Jonah on the subway when he was 5 years old, I was praying in tongues out loud because I was freaked out when I realized my 5-year-old had gotten, I'm like, I mean, I didn't even care. Like, yeah, it's still in there. If I need the ghost is there. But, oh, yeah. And for me, like, she asked, do you still do it? I said, yeah. You know what I find mostly when I go out and walk? If I'm walking, it just kind of, I sort of don't even realize I'm doing it. I just kind of start meditating and praying, and it's just kind of ecstatic utterances. And now I've even, like, some of these real New Age things like Gaia that we've talked about, you know, there's all these people that don't even consider themselves Christian who talk about a language of light. And so that's not just exclusive. Like, the Pentecostals tried to box that in and make it a doctrine. It's a much bigger thing. I think I've shared this with you before. I don't think I said it when we were out at Robert's the other day, but years ago, this would have been... Did I talk about when they went to the House of Wicca when I was out there? I know I've talked about it here. Back when I had the Bible school over here on Brickle Road, we had a lot of cults that were right around this area. And so the Bible school students would go to minister in some of these. I mean, it was some of the things that happened were crazy. But down here on Moreland, some of you might have passed it today coming in. Big Victorian house used to be the House of Ravenswood, where the Wicca, it's right next to where the Starbucks is now. And so Robert and another Bible school student, they said, we want to go down and minister to the witches. Are you okay with that? And I'm like, yeah, go for it. So they go in, and they're, you know, from where our paradigm is, we thought demons are going to start screaming and okay. So Robert goes in and he asks the woman, he said, do you mind if I pray for you? And she says, no, it's fine. So he starts praying in his prayer language, and she knew what he was saying. She said, oh, that's a beautiful language. That's a really old language. She started interpreting it. And he's like, wait, this is, your head's supposed to be turning around and, you know, you're supposed to be spitting pea soup, and this is supposed to be a deliverance thing. And it was a real, you know, I look back now and I think, wow, Spirit was teaching us things then that were beyond our theology. Like when I prayed with the Muslim man in Nigeria. I thought, I'm not sure this is right. Now I realize, oh, we were praying to the same God. I didn't realize that then. And for me to have tried to convert him to Christianity would have been demeaning to his belief system. It would be disrespectful. I'm in his country, on his turf, trying to impose my belief system on him. No. So what we did, it was, you know, I've told you this a million times, but you know, usually Muslims go to a mosque and bow toward Mecca. This man is walking back and forth with me on the roof of a hotel in Nigeria while I'm reading prayers at Avail Much and praying in the spirit and he's praying with me. I don't know what he was praying, but there was chanting going on. And I remember thinking, I don't know if we're supposed to be doing this. You know, I'm supposed to get him saved, right? That's why years later, when people like Carlton Pearson or Harold Lovelace or some of these people started saying things that I already knew by the Spirit, they gave me a language for it. I thought, oh, well, that's kind of what I've been experiencing all these years. I don't know how many of you had an evangelical background, but you remember back when we used to try to get everybody saved and you'd go meet somebody that didn't know Jesus at all, but they were like really sweet and they took care of poor people and helped people out. And you're like, what's wrong with this? Like, I'm the Christian and you're the non-Christian, but you're doing all the Jesus stuff. That's why I see some of these memes now. People say, if you really want to put Christ back in Christmas, go feed the poor. There's Jesus for you, but I don't believe in that. I want a nativity scene. I want plastic Jesus in the White House. I don't think Jesus cares about the plastic figurines. I don't think it's high on the Jesus priority list. Jesus never told people to celebrate his birthday anyway, so that's the whole, you know, if you want to, that's fine. But I promise you, I talked this over with him, and Jesus is not mad that Santa Claus gets some. Yeah, what Eddie just said is exactly. Somebody came up and called him good, and Jesus said, why do you call me good? There's none good but God. I mean, you talk about self-deprecating. I don't even think I would say that. If somebody called me good, I'd be like, well, I try, you know. But Jesus, I hope so. Thank you, you know. But Jesus says, don't call me good. I mean, that's really, talk about being detached from ego. Like, don't even call me good. Like, Jesus, if you're not good, then what about the rest of us? Anyway. So, back to the Rudolph story. What's my next thing up here so we can get back on track here? This is a meme that I saw. They used to laugh and call him names. Now they call it bullying. You know, those of us who grew up on playgrounds and had to deal with bullying didn't have to deal with something that exists now that's a whole other thing, and that's cyberbullying. You know, there was a time, you know, you only had to deal with it on the playground. Now, with the internet, it's unbelievable what some kids have to endure. And adults. And it's, I know, just not in recent years, but a few years ago, I mean, like, I would read stuff written about me on blogs of people that had never met me that had nothing to do with the truth. I mean, I would just read all this stuff like, where the heck are people getting this? And you can't even, you have no control over it. You're not able to say, excuse me, whoever you are, that's not true. Like, well, you can't, it's like there's no way to control it. The internet is so huge. But the salvation in this song is Santa sees something in him, even in his, what other people would call his oddity, that actually, it's like the scripture says, your gift makes room for you. You know, to be able to celebrate somebody's uniqueness and make them realize that what sets you apart from everybody is what makes you wonderful. You know, this is what you have to really be careful with kids growing up who are vulnerable to peer pressure. Because when you're growing up, there's the inclination to want to assimilate. I want to be like everybody else. I want the shoes everybody else is wearing. I want to be, you know, and that's still really strong. I mean, you look at the Kardashians. It's amazing to me because these are women who really were just kind of famous for being famous. You know, their dad was an attorney. He was one of O.J. Simpson's lawyers. And how they've turned that into this industry, and the younger one now, that she's a billionaire. I'm not talking about the older three. The younger one, that's Jenner. Billionaire! And you think, wow, that you must have a huge following of girls who must want to be like you. And if you give the thumbs up on something, it's cool. I mean, it's I don't know what to think about it. I'm so amazed at the power of the internet and how influential it becomes. The good part about aging, if you know how to do it correctly, is you embrace your originality more as you get older. You know, because you know, when you're younger, you want to be like everybody else, and you're willing to compromise certain things. I mean, some kids get into drugs or whatever, they're not even interested in it. It's just that somebody else was doing it, and they don't want to be ostracized for not participating. When you get older, if you know how to do it correctly, you finally start accepting, I don't like this, I do like this, this is who I am, this is who I'm not, and if you don't like it, that's your problem. I not only can't please you, I don't even care about pleasing you. I don't, you know, that's freedom. That's the good part. There's some parts about aging that are not that great. I'm just going to tell you. I try not to exalt them too much, but they are there nonetheless. I don't like to energize it, and let's keep that on the down low as much as possible. But there's other parts of it that are great. This is who I am, and I'm okay with that. I like who I am. You know, you look back, you know, in your old pictures, you think, why was I wearing that? Why did I? Well, because that's what everybody else was wearing, and that's what you thought. And yeah, everybody wants to be stylish, whatever. But you, as you get older, you start learning. Now, that doesn't look good on me. I would rather look good and be comfortable. And for some people, as comfortable is more important than looking good, whatever. But those are things that matter to you now that might not have mattered. You know, when you were younger, it was, I've got to be cool. When you get older, it's, I've got to be me. And I've got to be me is much better than I got to be cool, because I got to be me actually is me being cool. And at a certain point, you know, now in the song, it doesn't say that Rudolph embraced his red nose. It says that Santa saw the validity of it, the value of it. There was a meme, and Deb Mielstein's stream, she helped me find this, but this is photographic evidence that Rudolph wasn't allowed to play reindeer games. This whoever drew that, I thought, wow, you really captured the essence of what I'm talking about. I think whoever posted it meant it to be funny, but I thought, oh, that's not really funny. That's very real. That's something that a lot of people can relate to. So we go back to the word they. They never let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer game. All of the other reindeer used to laugh, call him names. I mean, that's, wow, that's heavy. And sometimes it's not easy to make people feel included. This is an apolitical statement, but I thought it was interesting because this week at the NATO conference, the prime ministers of the UK and Canada and France were overheard laughing at Trump and making fun of him. So last night, I was watching Saturday Night Live, and that was their opening, their cold open was that. And they had Jimmy, did you see it? They had Jimmy Fallon playing the Canadian guy. They had Paul Rudd playing the French guy, and James Corden playing Boris Johnson from the UK. And they were like in high school at the cool table, and they wouldn't let Trump had to eat with Latvia, and he kept wanting to eat with them. They're like, this chair is for somebody else. So they called Angela Merkel from Germany to come sit with her, and she was like, what's her name? Kate McKinnon played her, and she was like, oh, I'm at the cool table now. And it was actually kind of sad. It was like the first time I've ever really kind of felt compassion for Donald Trump. Like, it was just kind of sad to see him in that light, and they come and put, instead of a kick me sign, they put an impeach me sign on the back of it. But they were tapping into the whole thing about cliques and the cool table and the, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's a hard thing to know how to do. You know, some schools are doing this thing now where they rotate the seating in cafeteria, so everybody has to sit with everybody at some point. I could argue the point either way, you know, because kids have to learn how to develop their own social skills, but then there's also the idea of, you know, If I don't have a reason to sit at this table, I'm never going to talk to you. You know, like that. I will never have the opportunity. Like I remember, I was never. By the time I got in high school, I had found my own sense of self, and you know, I didn't feel alienation. I was popular or whatever. But I was very Christian, and I had a Bible study. So everybody saw me. Like, I didn't get invited to a lot of parties. And I didn't realize until I was an adult, oh, they probably didn't want me to come because I was preaching to everybody why they shouldn't drink. They probably didn't want to hear that. I'm thinking, I'm not going to judge y'all, but, you know, I probably would have been judgmental. But what was funny is, you know how Nicodemus came at night to Jesus? I can't tell you all the people that would come to me to pray for them. Who didn't want anybody else to know I'd ask. I mean, like, quarterback from the football team, everybody, you know, like, hey, man, don't tell anybody I'm asking you this. I need you to pray for me. So I'm like, okay, I'll pray for you. Secret safe with me. And I would never hang out with those guys publicly, but they came to me for prayer. So that was kind of my way to, you know, I connected with people. By that point in my journey, I had made peace with, this is, for the ministry part, this is who I am, kind of found an identity for it. But if there's something about you that's different, you know, the world typically frowns on people who are different, don't understand people who are different. Usually different people are discovered after they're gone. You know, they do something, change something, do something their own way, and people are like, oh, wow, that was really original how they did it. You go back and read about how their contemporaries felt about them. Many people weren't discovered. Their value wasn't discovered till after they were gone. If you can discover your value in your lifetime, that's a real blessing. Which brings me to the last scripture I want to share with you, and I've shared this with you before, but this is the scripture. Proverbs 22:6. It's where in the King James it says, "Raise up a child, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's older, he'll not depart from it." Now I was raised on that scripture, and we always heard that to mean, take them to church, teach them how to pray, you know, teach them the Bible, so indoctrinate them. And that's not at all what the Hebrew actually says here in the Amplified Classic. It says, train up a child in the way he should go, and in keeping with his individual gift or bent. And when he is old, he will not depart from it. What is the it? The it is find out what's great about him. You know, most people know Jonah as a guitarist now, but Jonah started as a drummer. And I was thinking about it today when he was playing the little drummer boy, because he came out of the womb pounding on things. I mean, when he was little, we would, you know, put a pot down in front of him, and he's pounding on it. He was drumming all the time. So we put him in drum lessons, because that was, if he didn't have any inclination of that, it would have never occurred to me to say, you need drum lessons. Because honestly, I just thought, well, drummers are drummers, right? You know, you don't have to learn chords or anything. Just, you got to drum. Well, no, there's technique you have to learn. So we, you know, spent a good bit of money on him for many years. But that was what his gift was. What I hate is when you see some kid that's doing something that they don't want to do, that you can tell, this is what my parents want me to do, and I don't really like this. I don't really enjoy this. There's too many kids stressed out with stuff. I was asking Olivia last week, she's in ballet, she plays the violin, she's in chorus, she's in a sewing class. And I said, Olivia, do you want to be doing all this stuff? She said, oh yeah, I love it all. I said, okay, just make sure, because that's a lot, you know, and going to school. And, you know, I'm glad that your mom wants you to, you know, play to your strengths, but just make sure they're things you want to do. And that's, of course, Christina knows that. But I just thought, well, that's a lot to keep up with, you know. A lot of rehearsals. Like, I picked her up the other day, and they were doing Ring Christmas Bells, da-da-da-da. I was looking at her sheet music. I said, have y'all got to memorize all this? Because this is pretty complicated. She said, yeah, that's coming up next week. All right. I'll be there. You know, taking way too many pictures. You can always tell me, you know, which one's there. Click, 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 click. I make no apologies. I've had too many great events in my life where there was no photographic evidence. So now when I go to Kroger, I take pictures. I mean, I don't know, that's a great looking produce section. I think people think Ken and I travel more than we actually do because we just photograph stuff. Like, if we take a walk, he'll take pictures of things that he's photographed a zillion times. We just like the way it looks tonight. People are like, y'all ever workmen? If you say that again, I'm going to slap you. Don't ask if we work. We work real hard. Him especially. He works two jobs. He just takes pictures of stuff. I like that about him, that when you look at a sunset, you think, oh, my God, that's beautiful. I'm going to take a picture of that. Yay. Good for you. That means you're a nice, evolved, aware person. One of the many reasons I love you. I think it's weird when people can look at a sunset and go, yeah, whatever. Like, really? You're not. In 61 years, I've seen a lot of sunsets. They still blow me away. I'm still amazed that a few minutes right before the sun goes down where, the sky's changing colors like every few seconds. Don't you think that's just amazing? And that's half the reason we go to these meditation things on the beach, just because I'm so blown away at what the sunrise and sunset looks like. It's just, wow, that's amazing. Yeah, it is. So in closing with this, I want to say, if your reindeer has a shiny red nose, celebrate. Say, that nose is beautiful. And one day, it's going to come in really handy. I don't know how. I don't know when. But then one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa came to say, talk about affirmation. Rudolph, with your nose so bright. I always imagine him saying that line and the other reindeer's going, it looks ridiculous, doesn't it, Santa? He goes, no. Won't you guide my sleigh? Not only I'm going to make you part of the group, I'm putting you in a leadership position. In other words, we can't pull this off without you. That'll shut up those other reindeer. Wait, what did he just say? He's going to fly with us? No, he's not just flying with us. He's leading us. In other words, we can't do Christmas without him. Why him? Because of that red nose. The red nose we've been making fun of all these years? Yeah. Santa seems to think it'll be a way to guide us through the fog. Wow. I did not see that coming. And that's, I don't like the word revenge, but the word, the saying, the best revenge is living well. When life does affirm you and your latter is greater than your former, it heals so much in you. In that, when I quoted myself earlier, I talked about Joseph. Joseph was, my God, kicked out from his brothers. They faked his death. They told their dad that he was dead. He went to prison on a false rape charge. They basically stole his life from him. And at the end of Genesis, there he is, now the Pharaoh of Egypt. They don't even recognize him. And when they finally recognize him, they say, are you going to kill us now? And he said, why would I kill you? He said, you meant it for evil. God used it for good. I mean, he's basically saying, I'm Pharaoh. What would be the point? It would be overkill for me to kill you. I want you to stay alive and see how well I did. I think there's a reason David said, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. It's God showing you off. When Santa came to Rudolph and said, with your nose so bright, that beautiful crimson nose, I'm going to put you at the head of the pack. That's him saying, I'm anointing your head with oil. And your ladder's going to be greater than your form. So whatever you have that is your gift, your uniqueness, your originality, you do you, boo-boo. Because the only way Rudolph could be Rudolph is to be himself. When the night's foggy, you don't need those other reindeer. You need the one that can see where he's going. So if your time hasn't come yet, it will. It will eventually. I've shared this with you before, but I remember I was watching her this week, because Whoopi Goldberg doesn't make as many movies as she used to, but she's created a whole other career in television now, because really The View is her show now. And it's in its 20th season. It's one of the most successful shows on TV. And I remember her saying years ago in an interview that that particular year she was the highest paid actress in Hollywood. And somebody asked, like, how did you do this? She says, well, I just had to wait until my audience found me. Because she said, most of the roles are going to white women, and the roles that go to black women are going to Angela Bassett or some, you know, women that look more like leading women. She says, I have unconventional looks. Everybody told me to get rid of my braids, dreads, whatever you call them. She said, you know, that's the way I like to wear them. I like to shave my eyebrows. This is the way I like to look. And she says, eventually people found me. And I thought, well, that's some real belief in who you are. But, you know, at some point you think, well, there's only so much I can change. I mean, I look like me, so I might as well play to my strengths. And now she's got, you know, her hair's all white, and it's from a movie she's doing with Stephen King. But I think she's adapted the look now. It's like, well, this is what I look like now. I'm like, bravo. You know, you're completely original. You never say, get me a Whoopi Goldberg type. There's only one of her. You might as well just cast her in the role, because she's she's it. And I love that when people just, you know, and all the people that made it really big, you know, Streisand, everybody told her, you'll never make it if you don't get a nose job. And she's like, I'm not changing my nose. For one thing, I don't think I'll sound the same if somebody messes with my nasal passages. She did all right. She's had a hit album in 6 consecutive decades. She's an EGOT winner. That means you've won an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony. She did okay. So is Whoopi, by the way. People who embrace their originality end up with EGOTs. And there's only about 10 of them. There's only about 10 people that have all of those, and they're nearly all, one common denominator happens, they are all completely original. You can't find anybody else that's like them. And now I listen to, this may be an age thing, but I listen to pop music now, and I can hardly tell one singer from another. Like, everybody sounds the same to me. Like, who is that? It's so rare now to hear a voice that you immediately go, oh, that's so-and-so, because they sound so distinctly like them. If you've got something that's unique to you, embrace it. When the right time comes, it's going to put you at the head of the pack. See, this will help you purge your ghost of Christmas past. All those voices that said you weren't good enough, you're not only good enough, you're better. Amen? All right. You didn't put the clock on there. I don't know if it's... I have no idea what time it is, because there's no clock up here. So, see, you gotta clock me, or I'll just keep going. I can.
You're doing fine.
Huh?
You're doing just fine.
All right. Well, let's all stand. When you listen to Christmas music this year, really listen to it, because a lot of these songs, a lot of these stories, a lot of these parables really have something to say to you about your own life. I've even thought about going to see one of the productions of A Christmas Carol this year, because I haven't seen it live on stage in years, and it's such a powerful story about, you know, what made Ebenezer Scrooge the way that he is. There's a reason why people are like they are, and sometimes you have to go back and, you know, find the kingdom key to unlock your true self. Please remain standing. We'll play this, and then I'll speak a blessing over you.
Hello, and welcome to Metron. Metron means measure.
Contributing to Metron is quick and easy. You can give anytime using any smartphone.
Anytime.
Text the amount you'd like to donate.
And then
404-620-5044.
Easy peasy.
You will then receive a notification that you successfully completed your donation. You may also visit missionthenow.com and click the support tab to give there as well. When you contribute to Metron, you're also donating to the charity or organization of the month. Thank you for your investment into Metron.
Make a check, make it to JESM, and Danny will receive that if you have cash. pay it forward and be a blessing to somebody. For our first timers, Emperor, we're glad to have you. I speak a blessing over you, over your Christmas season, over your ability to hear, because Christmas is saying something to you. The Word is being made flesh in your life. I speak freedom from stress over you, that whatever you have to deal with during the holiday season, you will get everything done, that it'll be easy. I speak health to you and restoration and peace to your household, and believe that you wake up tomorrow saying, this is the day the Lord has enabled me to make. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Don't forget, this week's the deadline for the Christmas thing, so I want you to, if you don't have the money, ask Eddie, and he'll pick up your tab. He's got you. God bless you. Go in peace.